better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. Busch Light Apple, the newest beer in the Busch family.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
When I turn on the Morning Rush, I want to hear Ty at his best every single day.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorback.
Ty, fortunately, has saved the world and not yet procreated.
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast.
If you're an NBA GM looking at Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones, who are you taking in this upcoming NBA draft? That's coming up here on the Morning Rush. Before we get into that, I want to tell you about NWA Gold and Silver.
You know, those gold or silver coins that you have in a safety deposit box, a gun safe, maybe just some gold jewelry, silver jewelry you've got in a jewelry box. Could be worth thousands of dollars. Take it to an NWA Gold and Silver location near you, Bentonville, Fayetteville, and in Fort Smith. They'll give you an appraisal, tell you what it's worth, and they could put thousands of dollars of cash in your hand. So what you have could be worth thousands. So if it's broken jewelry, jewelry that's out of style, you're never going to wear again, why keep it around only to have it lost or stolen, and then you've got nothing? Turn it into cash today. Maybe there's something you would rather have or just something you need right now. It could be worth thousands of dollars to you. NWA Gold and Silver. They are in Bentonville. You'll find them at 1130 North Walton. In Fayetteville, Nelson's Crossing by Jason's Deli in Fort Smith. They're on Rogers Avenue, just above Central Mall. The price of gold right now is at recent highs, near all-time highs. This is the time to take your gold coins, your gold jewelry, and turn it into cash. Take it to NWA Gold and Silver. These are the people that pay the most. NWA Gold and Silver, Bentonville, Fayetteville, and in Fort Smith.
Conventional wisdom would lead you to believe that Isaiah Joe is the easy pick when it comes to Mace and Isaiah. But if you look at just some of how the NBA has played today, look at their two games. Now, Isaiah has more of an impact on the defensive end of the floor, it looked like this past season, but you wonder how much Mace was gambling, if he will be able to play more of just staunch defense in the NBA. We know that he has some deficiencies athletic, but it looks like he shored a bunch of those up based on the different workouts that you've seen. We'll have to see what he looks like when he faces off against guys that are at that level. But, Tommy, is that answer as easy as some people would make you to believe that Isaiah is the clear choice for when it comes to being in the next level?
No, I don't think it's as clear and easy as the take the younger guy that's maybe got more upside, because who's the more proven guy out of the two? Is it Mason Jones?
It's Mason.
It's Mason Jones. He's the more proven. So sometimes the easy answer might be you take the more proven commodity of the two players, because I'd say it's pretty obvious that Mason Jones has proven more and accomplished more. Now, maybe some of that's, you go back to the fact that Isaiah had the injury and missed the five games in the heart of the season. We didn't get to see maybe what his full potential was last year. But, no, so I don't know it's that easy. I mean, Isaiah is, what, 2 years younger than him, actually? So, I mean, there's some things there. But I see the attractiveness and why Isaiah in his resume may seem like a higher ceiling or more potential down the road to most NBA executives. And I think that's probably how it would go if they both ended up on a draft board. I'm very interested. And that's exactly what really you need for Eric Musselman and in the future of the program and recruiting. You need both of these guys drafted.
Yeah.
And that's the best case scenario. As much as you want Isaiah Joe back, the best deal for Eric Musselman is both of these guys go somewhere in the draft, even if it's both second round, even if they're the last two picks, what would be 59 and 60. That's still the best deal for Arkansas, is getting both of those guys drafted.
Because I think it was Caleb and Cody Martin and maybe Jordan Caroline that were all invited to the combine, but only, and I'm forgetting if it was Cody or Caleb, I think it was just Cody that was drafted by the Charlotte Hornets. I think Caleb is still in the NBA, but there are guys that will get invited to the combine and won't get drafted and stuff. And when you look at this upcoming season, as far as just like, and I say upcoming season, more upcoming draft and stuff, there's going to be a lot of big time decisions that have to be made from scouts, from GMs that didn't necessarily get to see these guys participate in the elitist of competition, which is the NCAA tournament, when we're matching up against the best players in college basketball. So I think with Mason, you mentioned that he's proven it. He's been the number one guy. And I know Isaiah He's probably not going to be a number one guy at the NBA, but Mason has shown you that he can be a really good role player, and I wouldn't even call him a role player. I would call him the number two or number three guy on last year's ball club. And then this past season's ball club, he showed you that he can be a number one guy and can take over a team with really not a lot of options and still put up a ton of points. He's shown you the ability that in one offseason, he can improve his jump shot. I mean, we saw how much he improved from being just a spot-up three-point guy initially when he got to Arkansas to being just an absolute gamer. When we had him on the program months ago, he talked about he really idolizes James Harden, Manu Ginobili, Luka Doncic, and if you watch his game, he's got a very similar type of game, how he gets to the rack, how he takes certain angles, his step-back ability. I mean, this guy, as far as his offensive arsenal goes, was one of the best in college basketball last year, and that's why so many of you were really frustrated when he did not win the SEC Player of the Year as voted on by the coaches. That award went to Emmanuel Quickley. And I think when you look at Isaiah can just be as dominant on both ends of the floor, because what Isaiah does is you have to know where this guy is at all times. You cannot leave him, because if he gets hot, you're screwed. AKA 2 years ago in Lexington, Kentucky, where he just lit a fire on John Calipari's defense, and John Cal was so mad at those guys at halftime because Isaiah just went off. And then on defense, he's 6'5", 6'6". I don't know his exact wingspan, but he's lanky, and he gets after you on both ends of the floor. Both these guys have some to prove. I think Mason takes that chip a little more on his shoulder, whether it was Connor State, whether it was initially at Arkansas, people didn't think he was going to be the player that he became. And then now just another step of, I got to prove that I can be a National Basketball Association player. And then with Isaiah coming off that injury, people questioning, can he be this just incredible basketball player at the next level? And I don't know if he's going to be that. I think he can have success, but it's going to be interesting to see who gets drafted first. I think most people would say that Isaiah would go first off the board if one of these guys were taken.
So no question, it was Mason Jones' team last year. He was the alpha, right? No one would question that.
Yeah.
So if Isaiah comes back, A, do you think he would be the alpha on this team that's got a lot of incoming freshman talent, but also got a lot of transfer guys that are older? Do you think Isaiah would be the alpha? And what kind of, if he is, what kind of value does that add to his resume if you're an NBA scout looking at that? Is that of value? Because I think it has to add something to that.
So there's different levels of alphas, right? There's Tom Brady's and there's Tim Duncan's. There's guys that lead more by example. Then there's guys that do it just more vocally and stuff. Mason was more of a vocal leader, a vocal alpha this past season. Isaiah,
but he had a lot of 30-point games. 30-point
yeah,
plus games, too.
Not to say he didn't lead by example, but yeah, you would definitely say that he's more vocal than Isaiah, right?
Oh, yes, but okay. I mean, but at the end, I mean, just look at the box scores. I mean, he carried the team on his back, particularly when Isaiah was out.
And that's not to say that he wasn't an alpha by example. I'm just saying he's a lot more vocal than Isaiah.
Okay.
If Isaiah came back this season and ended up playing, I've told you that I really think Moses has a chance to be that guy. You got some older guys, whether it's Vance Jackson, whether it's Justin Smith, whether it's Jalen Tate. I think Isaiah, everyone would look to him as the best player of the team, but that doesn't necessarily mean he has to be the most vocal. Like Jimmy Witt was, I think, wasn't necessarily the best player on the team last year, but a lot of people looked to him as a leader. And, I mean, he was easily, like, I love listening to him, and I love listening to Muss. I love listening to Jimmy Witt post-game more than Eric Musselman, just because I loved what he had to say. There's different ways to be a leader. We go about it different ways in our everyday lives. Some people are born to be leaders, some people aren't. And as far as I just don't know what it, from a talking standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, I don't know what Eric Musselman would require of Isaiah when it came to that particular role. Now, from a playing standpoint, I think he would be the guy, but I'm curious to see if Isaiah started talking more, communicating more, if he was more vocal, more boisterous, more out there with some of his conversations with his players, with his coach. That would be an interesting storyline to watch if he came back for another year.
And I don't know what value an NBA scout, an NBA GM, an NBA head coach puts on that, you know, for the next level. Because you're not going to walk in as a rookie generally and be the alpha on any team.
Yeah, exactly right. So.
You're listening to the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. It's like the sound of refreshment meets the taste of the orchard.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hogs!
Good morning, Tom. What's going on a Tuesday, man?
Well, I'm sitting on my back porch about to go tend to the garden and reading the newspaper on the my tablet. It's a good day.
Not a bad day to start. So we're looking out here at the river right now. The fog's gone away, and we got a beautiful view outside. So guess we're both taking in the Arkansas beauty on this Tuesday morning.
Yeah. Awesome, man. That's my kind of a day. I hope you guys are social distancing properly.
We're apart on this table right now, so we're doing our best. Tom, last segment we were discussing the offensive MVP outlook for this upcoming Arkansas football team this season. I think the majority of people would first and foremost point to Rakeem Boyd. But is there someone else on this roster that you think can be the offensive MVP and will be the offensive MVP of this team this year?
Well, you know, if you look at it based on prior performance, I mean, the dialogue, the discussion opens and closes with Boyd, who, with his speed, I mean, you think about the Colorado State game, he had a breakaway touchdown, Kentucky, he opens the game with a breakaway, I think Western Kentucky, and Arkansas hasn't had a back, you know, that has put together multiple TD runs like that in many years. I mean, you're thinking back toward McFadden, and there might have been somebody, you know, an Al Davis or somebody, but that's extraordinary stuff when you can get the hole and then, you know, shrug off a linebacker's tackle, maybe juke a safety or stiff arm a safety and score a touchdown from 74 yards away. Big stuff. But considering how much the ball is touched by the quarterback, I've got to say that Felipe Franks could come in, and if he's well protected, if he adapts to the scheme nicely and he and the receivers are on the same page, he would have a chance. And then if one of the receivers – and here's the thing. I hope that they spread the ball out very nicely among their top receivers to keep defenses from trying to lock down, say, a Trey Knox or a Traylon Burks or a Mike Woods. But if one of those three up and scores, you know, 8 or 10 receiving touchdowns and puts together a lot of yardage, they would have a chance. But in descending order, I would say Rakeem Boyd, Felipe Franks, assuming he wins the starting quarterback job as we do, and then maybe one of those top receivers.
Yeah. Tom, it just feels like such a big week for college football, maybe just a big week for just sports in general. Baseball's got some decisions possibly to make. We're going to figure out what's going on with Major League Baseball, and then maybe the next 12, 24, 36 hours, who knows, they're having some issues with positive testing already, just a few days into their resumption of a regular season or the start of a regular season. But presidents and chancellors of the SEC are going to meet virtually in a few days. Just feels like there's a lot on the line this week to me.
It really does. And if you can imprint our perceptions on March the 15th, you know, you get over the shock of the tournament being canceled. You know, they went from, you know, one day it was going to be the tournament will be played with no fans, and then boom, it's over. No championships. We're at a standstill. If you can imprint our impressions from that moment onto today, I would have thought we are on the downside of this. Football, you know, we're going to be almost full steam heading into football, and that is just not the case. And a lot of the examples that are the hottest examples in the country right now are in the negative side for the SEC presidents and chancellors, who are supposed to meet on Thursday, and I suppose at that point give best recommendations for courses of action. And it may be, okay, we're going to wait one more week before we say what we're going to do. I don't know what their ultimate decision will be, but all the current data just does not look well. And then you look on page 2 of our paper today, Thomas Boswell, a longtime columnist in Washington, is basically saying we need to shut this whole thing down. I think a lot of it depends on how many positive tests, what type of outbreaks we can basically tolerate, because it looks to me like MLB is saying, okay, you know, the Marlins, you know, you guys tested positive up in Philly. We're going to postpone the games for a couple of days, test everybody, see if we can get you back to Miami. And maybe by Wednesday they're playing ball, which is a little bit eye-opening. But I'm thinking at this point that they've got to be thinking about starting a little bit later and trying to play conference only plus one or conference only plus two in the SEC's case, and just see if they can squeeze in as much as they can and hope for the best on the outbreaks. I mean, it just seems like there's no way you can avoid having some type of flare-ups if baseball, which does not have the close contact, is having them. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and I know we're going to get to visit again Thursday, maybe, you know, and kind of get our last impressions maybe before we possibly hear something at the end of the week ahead of this meeting. There doesn't seem to be hard deadlines today, but maybe the one deadline that I've got in my mind that's looming, and I'm basing this just on what Hunter Yurecek said to us on the last Zoom call, is and one impression he made on me is these players don't want to start camp and go through a few weeks of practices and lay it on the line.
Don't make us go through
camps. Don't make us go through camps, and don't make us go through the heat and the work and put it on the line to take our season away from us. And that kind of stuck with me, Tom. And I think that probably resonates with Hunter. I don't know where it sits with the other 13 ADs. I don't know if that's going to resonate with chancellors like Joseph Steinmetz and his counterparts around the SEC. But to me, that feels like somewhat of at least an artificial deadline that, hey, we're not going to start, you know, full-on camp and let them put pads on and start having real physical contact until we make a decision about whether or not we're really going to go forward with the season. Now, I may be wrong about that, but that's just kind of my gut feeling is we're going to make a decision about the start of a season before we start practice, true, genuine practice.
Right, that's what you think. And I think you're right. It did make a big impression on Hunter Yurecek to the point that he passed it along to us.
Right.
That, hey, this is what the players are telling me. Mm-hmm. You know, don't make us go through that grueling heat. This camp is tough, and it is, man. When I played high school football, which is not near the intensity that you go through in college, I remember just being in a blur during training camp. You know, when it was true 2-a-days back then, and you're just getting through it. You're almost like a zombie. You're focusing a lot on learning the plays and all that, but the physical conditioning part of it. You know, you're sweating out all kind of, you're losing pounds and sweating out all kind of, you know, impurities from your body and all, and then doing it again the next day. So it's tough. but I think it would be next Friday that camps would start. And I'm not sure of the date, but somewhere around August the 7th, maybe, for the Razorbacks.
Right.
And you would not want to get cranked up and get going. You're right, if they feel like they're not going to really play football. But what my hope is that they feel like they are going to play football. Maybe they can, you know, maybe they can spread camp a little bit and say, oh, look, we're going to start in late September and just try to do the best they can with it. I mean, there was positive news yesterday in that they're going to start clinical testing of a vaccine. So if there's positive results from that, maybe we could turn the corner quickly. It's just that the numbers just have not dropped like maybe we all expected they would.
Yeah.
And we seem to be maybe just coming over the peak and heading on the downhill, but we don't really know that.
So, but isn't there some merit in the thought or the idea that getting through camp and getting a team to at least internally survive in the right word, but go through a few weeks of practice and their numbers stay in check and not having positives and the metrics of containing coronavirus, being able to do that is one of the boxes you need to be able to check before you can even really entertain moving forward with games and the travel and the things that we're seeing Major League Baseball having to deal with right now. That just being able to, because what we still don't know is the physical interaction, the physical competitive play that football has that other sports don't. We don't know how that's going to maybe create problems that we just don't have the answers to yet. Isn't camp maybe part of being able to answer some of those questions that we've got questions about but no answers to yet?
Yeah, absolutely it is. I mean, that's where the players are just going to have to, you know,
I know you don't want to test on players, but, I mean, honestly, if you can't clear those hurdles, you probably can't move forward to a season, and we got to clear some of these hurdles.
Exactly. And that's the thing is the players, they don't want to have to go through camp and not play, but you can't get ready for a season otherwise. And there's still doubt and there's still issues. So they might just have to suck it up and do the best they can in camp and then end up having an altered season or something like that. Or you could start a season and then flare ups occur and then it's not tenable. So they're just going to have to it's a rough year on everybody, and they're just going to have to be part of it. I saw something last night on a Chicago Bears video of how they enter their building, and it's amazing. They have like no touch. They come up and show a car that gets them in the building. Then they walk straight up to a scanner that takes their temp. If they're running any kind of temperature, they don't go in the building, you know, proper. And there's so many touchless things. And then I saw other video. I'm not sure what team it was, but their dudes were walking up. They were wearing masks, but they were putting their hand on the door handle and opening up and going in. And I'm thinking, wow, the Bears got ahead of the curve on that deal. So I'd like to think that there's going to be some innovations that come into play in this that maybe last a while, like the Zoom and video recruiting. We think that's going to stick around. Well, entries into buildings and things like that are probably going to become a little less handsy, and because the world is only going to continue to probably evolve different viruses as we go along. Mm.
Tom Murphy with us on the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Tom, when someone asks you or someone tweets at you or someone gets at you and they say you don't care about the safety and well-being of kids because you want this college football season to happen or you think it should happen, what is your retort to that?
Well, I'm not one to usually engage a whole lot on Twitter. I certainly don't like to get into big arguments. And I know that guys from the younger generation are, I don't know, maybe a little more open to doing that. So I would think that, and that hasn't happened to me a whole lot, but my position has been out there that I want to try to play a season. And I know that there are a lot of other journalists in the country, Thomas Boswell being one, who have staunchly said there shouldn't be a season. And he was writing about Dusty Baker, 71 years old, already had medical conditions. And he's going to be in a dugout, and other guys who've had conditions. So I get it. This country's built on people being able to speak their minds. And if people are mad at me for, like, say, I hope that we have a season, I'm not the decision maker. I just want to do it for what it means to the country, what it means to, you know, our livelihoods and the fabric of society. The thing that we're not sure about, I guess, is if you get it, you know, I read all this stuff out there. I'm sure you guys do, too. How does it affect you? Is there long-term effects? You know, if young guys get it, Clay Travis, for instance, who's out on the West Coast, has just writes that it's a minuscule chance of anyone getting, you know, deathly ill or even seriously ill in certain age groups. So I don't know what the real stats are, but I just want to see us try to have a football season.
Yeah, it's and I think the statistic, I was looking this up the other day, and this comes directly from the CDC website, that there's only 100 and something kids, and I say kids, between the eight, I think it goes up to 25 that have passed away from the scene. And obviously we don't want to see the loss of life from anyone, but people are – There's such a divide right now, and it comes back to politically. If you think one thing, then people just assume you're on this side, or people think if you're one thing, you're on this side. And I don't think there's any diversity of thought that people allow you to have. They say, well, if you think this, then you have to be this, or you think this. And I feel like, I mean, this is the United States of America, Tom. Like, we are allowed to have differing political opinions and not have to agree with 100% on one side or not have to agree for the other. And when it comes to this college football season, this is not a black and white issue. This is an issue that we have never faced before, not only as a country, but as a world. And for people just to assume that the answer should be right in front of us, or you absolutely should do this or absolutely to do that, I can't get on board with that one way or another on either side, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, clearly there should be differing opinions. And, I mean, but if you took a poll of the college football players, you're in the, to me, you're in the mid-90s or high-90s of the guys who want to play.
Yeah.
So that has to be taken into account as well. But, you know, obviously what the presidents and chancellors of the SEC and the top administrators and other conferences are going to have to deal with is how can we safely get through this season? What do we do in the case of an outbreak? What's our optimal number of games? What's our optimal operating of football, a game situation? How many fans are we going to allow? There's so many factors. I was talking to somebody yesterday that they can have meetings all on a Friday, and here's how we're pointing into next week, and then come in Monday, and so many factors have changed that they have to go back to point two in their original plan and rework that. And we're not dealing with that. You know, we're dealing with how we're going to cover sports. So to think that you're in the middle of it and trying to deal with all the plans and contingencies, it's really tough. And yeah, in the meantime, you do have sports media and you have fans, everybody pounding you with their opinions and stuff. So that's what makes America America. We all have our voices.
All right, since you don't have an answer about what we're going to do with college football, let me ask you a question to get you out of here that I'm sure you've got to know the answer to this one, all right? What's Isaiah Joe going to do on the draft coming up in the next few days?
Wow, it looks to me the trending thought is if he's not working out with his team, that he might be one foot out the door. And I don't know if that's the ultimate answer. I think it's still undecided, but if you were to pin me down, I think he's leaning toward leaving.
Yeah. You know, and the reported number, August 3rd's the deadline to pull your name out, but isn't there a caveat to that with the combine that it's August 3rd or 10 days following the combine? Isn't that the deal? We've been trying to pin this down because August 3rd's the date everyone reports, but the combine mm-hmm. follows that, which we were reading this a while back, and we were trying to pin down exactly what it is, you know?
Yeah, it was something about August 3rd or 10 days before the – yeah, you're on the right track there, I believe.
Right.
I think
it's not absolutely August 3rd. There's a caveat with 10 days around the combine.
I think it was whenever they scheduled the combine, whenever that was scheduled, whichever came first. So it's either August 3rd or whenever the combine, or 10 days prior to the combine, whichever one came okay. first, I think was the wording.
All right.
Yeah, so that would mean August 3rd would be the deadline.
Is the deadline? Okay.
I think that's what that would end up meaning. So, you know, here he is. He's on the brink. He's had many months. I know that there's been some delays in the reporting back to them. You know, I think the Razorbacks will be okay either way. I think they're still going to have a strong roster. But with Isaiah Joe, with a score of that deadly of a shooter, boy, they would be in a different stratosphere if they had him back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Completely different ball club, that is for sure. Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Tom, we'll catch up with you on Thursday, man.
Sounds good. See y'all.
You're listening to the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. New light lager made with natural apple flavors, available now for a limited time.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Now, you should not answer this statement of what's your favorite Razorback football memory. Why do you enjoy Arkansas football like this?
I got no answers.
That's not how you should answer. You should have plenty of answers. Don't pull a John L. Smith. Get him in here, 877-377-6963. So my most vivid first memory of Razorback football, we've talked about this before, is Miracle on Markham, War Memorial Stadium, 2002, Matt Jones, DeCorey Birmingham. And one of my favorite memories growing up was listening to the late, great Paul Eales. Paul made Razorback sports like ingrained in my head from an early age, because if I didn't get to go to the game, I was trying to listen to it on the radio or watch it on TV, whatever the case may be. That's another great thing Frank Broyles did, was establish the Razorback Sports Network across the entire Arkansas state. The fact that you had so many different radio stations where you could listen to the game. And Paul Eales, for me as a child, he made Arkansas football legendary. Now, there were times where it wasn't so legendary. commentary. It just wasn't fun to watch or listen to. But Paul was so good at describing the game and doing it in like a simple way, but at the same time an elegant and sophisticated way. So Paul Eales is definitely one of the reasons that I grew up from an early age loving Razorback football.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's true with you know, and I know we're talking about football specifically. I think Chuck Barrett's work in baseball is a reason Razorback baseball's fan base
elevated,
grew
yeah.
Across the state, and it's become more of a statewide sport. There's no question Paul's work in football over the decades from the mid-70s till his passing in 06 brought many fans in. And this was the day, you know, long before you had television for every game. So no, I can understand how as a kid and I think that still to this day, a lot of these, because of social media, a lot of these calls that Chuck makes get paired up with a video, and we live them out for days after a big game or a big play on social media. Mm-hmm. I think they spread like bigger wildfires today because we get to see the video and the call together a lot of times on social media, and they become even more legendary, in particularly if the team's good. You know, I think back to 2010 and 2011, we really didn't have a decade ago social media like we do now, but can you imagine, you know, those Ryan Mallett and Tyler Wilson teams that Bobby Petrino was the head coach of, if we had social media today and some of Chuck's great calls of those games, if we were able to do it in today's social media world.
Yeah, no, I think it would only be elevated because what Twitter get going in 2009?
Yeah, but I mean it's not like it is now.
Yeah, no, it's the elevation. But like you're talking about, it's just not the same. And I know those a lot of what we always talk about being a Remember Win State, but a lot of those get played. And you mentioned Chuck Barrett elevating Arkansas baseball and elevating and really growing the fan base. The same could be said about Mike Nail with the Arkansas basketball team. Sure. How his calls were just so good. I mean, when you had a lineup at one point in time, it was Paul Eales, Mike Nail, and Chuck Barrett. I mean, you'd have to go across and really stretch far and wide to find a better trio of broadcasters than those three individuals.
Yeah. A lot of schools don't have a trio. They had one guy that, you know, did them all, or maybe one person did baseball, the other did football and basketball. But now, you know, obviously, you know, the reason you love football are the players and the game on the field, but I think you're looking for some answers that are maybe you're not necessarily between the lines here.
Off the beaten path a little bit.
One of the things I love about going to a game, about being there on game day, about the experience, I want to be there when they run through the A. I want to be there when they form the block A and march from the south end zone to the north and set up for the team to come out a few minutes later. To me, the pageantry of college football is so different. You go to a Cowboys game, you go to an NFL game, you go see the Chiefs play. You know, the tailgating is crazy. The fans are crazy. Their faces are painted. They're going nuts because they're playing the Raiders that day or whatever. You're at a Cowboys game, they're playing the Eagles. But there's just something different about a college game, the way the band is on the field before the game, the way the national anthem is done to perfection, the way everything is orchestrated to a T, and the traditions that are carried out week in and week out. To me, I feel like I've been cheated. I just don't miss that part of the pregame. I mean, I love getting in there early and watching the players warm up. But one of the things I always want to have my eyes on is just everything that happens out there 15 or 20 minutes before kickoff, because to me that's just part of the pageantry of college football that's unique. And the running through the A is something that's a unique tradition at Arkansas. And, you know, Tennessee, they run through the T, and there's other places they, you know, the band forms something and they run out. But that's one of the things.
Do you miss the blow-up hog they used to run through?
The running through the A is the tradition. And that's one of the things that if the band's not part of the game day atmosphere this year, and I don't really see how you're going to have an A on the field and socially distance, so I don't think that's going to be part of the tradition if there's football in 2020. That's going to be weird.
Yeah,
and that's part of why I love Razorback football.
And I enjoyed watching that as a kid and stuff, them running out, because
to me it was just neat how they formed all that. You know, they did the national anthem and they spelled the Go Hogs, and then they marched to one end, and
I don't know. That just it's just a great way of getting the energy going.
Yeah, so. Like the dotting of the I in Ohio State is a really big deal. I mean, there's other programs that you can point to that their band doing something on the field all the time is a really big deal, and I know that I really appreciated that. I wanted to make sure that my father, my brother, and I always got there in the appropriate time so we could see all that. So that's definitely a big deal for me. I'll tell you something that gets lost in the fact, and what's the interstate or the highway that's since been built that takes away from the pig trail?
Well, I mean, you had...
From Little Rock to Fayetteville, whatever it's called.
Well, you had 20... a lot of people call the pig... People confused Old 71 as the pig trail. That wasn't really the pig trail. The pig trail was 23 when you cut off at Ozark.
What's Lance doing?
And you go Ozark. So it's Highway 23 when you'd cut up and you go up through Cass and you get over and get on 16. That's really the pig trail.
Okay. So, well, I appreciate taking that route every once in a while. Now, I won't take it every time when I'm going from Little Rock to
it's curvy.
Northwest Arkansas.
Now, you're not talking about Old 71 where you get off at Alma and take the old highway.
Dude, I don't know. It's okay. So whatever, like, I'm 25, so whatever's been built at the time where you just go straight, you just take the highway or whatever, and then you get off of Fayetteville and go. Not or you have to go through the curves.
Oh, you're about Old 71.
Yeah, I whatever that is. I enjoy going on the pig trail every once in a while because of the scenic views and when the leaves are just dried and stuff. Now, I won't do that every time, but I enjoyed that. That's one of the parts of Razorback football that I really appreciated because growing up in Little Rock, I'd get to go to the War Memorial games, and then maybe once a year, maybe twice a year, I'd get to go up to Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium and go to one of those games. And I appreciate every once in a while is going on that trail. It just felt more like an old-time drive with college football. And I don't know. And, yes, some people associate the pig trail with Arkansas football and stuff, but for me that was definitely a vivid part of my childhood was every once in a while we take that scenic route, and I really appreciate that. Now, that doesn't necessarily – not everyone correlates Arkansas football with that, but I definitely do.
You leave out of Fayetteville and end up down at West Fork and Winslow. Me and my wife did that a few months ago. We ended up down there at Grandma's Cafe down there around Winslow. That's your kind of eating down there.
Yeah, I need to go. Yeah. So got a text in here from JT in Hot Springs. He said, Frank Broyles made this state have a passion for Razorback football. Hearing Coach Broyles speak about the fight, the heart, and the spirit of a Razorback, that's definitely someone that's on the list. I know for many of you listening, especially the older audience members listening, Frank Broyles is one of the main reasons that you enjoyed Arkansas football. Just the vigor, the attentiveness, the love that he had for this program, in a sense, caused you to have the same admiration and love for the Arkansas football program. And one of the best quotes that he's ever had was after the Tennessee win Tennessee in 99, right?
Yep. And they lost in 98, then they won by the same score in 99 at home.
And he comes in after and gives this great speech. And,
Sterner to Lucas.
Yeah, victory will be habitual, and that's one of the best quotes in the history of Razorback sports. That particular quote, and Houston Nutt's really excited because he's coming in and they're talking about that. And it's a really cool thing to see the love that he had for the Razorbacks. And the best way I can kind of redirect that is my late grandfather, because he had so much respect for Frank Broyles. He loved reading Clay Henry stuff on Hogs Illustrated. He just loved the Razorbacks so much and dedicated much of his life not only to his family but to Arkansas itself. And I feel like that my grandpa was not the only one that did that. There's so many people that kind of took after Frank Broyles and his philosophy when it comes to the dedication of Arkansas football.
Yeah. I just think, you look back and you're talking about your grandfather, such a tradition built in the 60s and, from the early to mid 60s and when Arkansas was really in its kind of golden age, when those great teams in 64 and 65 and all the way through the end of the decade and that great team in 69 and, the tradition that was built then when Arkansas football really defined what our state was about. And Arkansas and Texas, that rivalry was really cemented. And, none of us were, me and you weren't around then for that. Mm-hmm. And, a lot of our audience wasn't around for them, but our parents were, and our grandparents certainly were. And they taught our parents what it was all about then. And that's where a lot of this was formed. You know, that's what it goes back to, and it was what Coach Broyles built then. Where it was all really formed was in that period of the mid 60s and into the 70s, and then Lou Holtz, you know, added upon that for a while there in the late 70s and into the early 80s. So,
and what it does in a sense, since it unifies the entire state. Frank Broyles has always talked about the reason he didn't want to play Arkansas to play in-state schools is because he didn't want anyone inside the state have a chance to cheer against the Razorbacks. Well, what Arkansas football does, for the most part, it's not in every single case, but you're playing a team, the entire state gets behind this football team. We heard Tony Bua talk about that. We've heard other out-of-state kids talk about how when they initially were ingratiated and came into the football program, they were just shocked that you weren't just playing for a little pocket in northwest Arkansas. You're playing for the entire state, whether it's northeast, northwest, like south, it doesn't matter. Like, everyone, for the most part, is a fan of this program, which is really cool and makes it really unique. And when you think about just the fan aspect, like, I enjoyed going to the games as a kid growing up, because whenever we were tailgating and stuff, everyone was just so friendly. I can't even begin to tell you how much food I was offered as a young kid, and just walking around and stuff with my dad, or just walking around with buddies. Like, just Arkansas fans are so forthcoming. Now, if an LSU Tiger walks by, there might be a few swear words that get tossed their way. But if you're wearing Razorback red, and especially if you're a kid, these older gentlemen, for the most part, are always, hey, you want to try some of this chili? You want to try some of this pork butt, or whatever the case may be, whatever's getting grilled that day. And I really appreciated, like, the Southern hospitality aspect of going to an Arkansas game, where it was just like one big happy family, like one big Thanksgiving dinner. And I felt like it's been that way ever since. That way, when I get up in age and I'm not doing this anymore and I'm going to games, just doing whatever, I want to pass that same type of tradition, that same type of mentality along to the 13-year-old boy walking around experiencing his first Arkansas game for the time, because I was passed along that same type of friendliness from older people that I encountered when I was younger.
I wish they could figure out a way where it wasn't so cut up or separated or something with it, where the tailgating was just a better atmosphere in Fayetteville.
And, it just doesn't hold a candle to other SEC venues.
Well, it's just because it's so, I mean, they've tried with the gardens, and that's helped. You've got an area down at Baum Stadium and some parking there. It's just a matter of, you've just got to have an area where you can put a lot of people in one place. And I think having more games in Fayetteville will help with that, because, you know, it's a big investment to buy a spot, rent a spot. And the more games you have, the easier it is for people to dedicate their money to that and know that they're going to get, you know, feel like they've got enough of a return on that investment. So I think tailgating will get better as, you know, obviously they win more, but I think that's an area they got to focus on. They've made an improvement with the gardens. I think they've got to do some things around Baum Stadium and those, because they got a lot of parking there, but it's just so distant from the stadium itself. They got to find a way to make the pregame atmosphere in and around campus better, to where it has more of an SEC type feel.
Well, LSU, I think, has a rule where there's no, like, ban. You can just tailgate anywhere. Now, I don't think you can tailgate technically on campus at the University of Arkansas and stuff. And like you said, it's spread out in a sense, like the Baum Stadium and stuff. But it's like, Wart, would you agree? I know maybe this is a little biased because I'm a Little Rock guy, but I think you can agree that War Memorial tailgating is better than Fayetteville.
Well, yeah,
right?
Because of the way it's set up. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got cars rode up, lined up.
Exactly.
And it's just more of a party atmosphere. That's what I'm saying. The way it's cut up and segmented in Fayetteville, just because of the way the parking situation is, it just makes it a bigger challenge to create that atmosphere.
And there's pockets and stuff. Got a good text in here from Jason Harrison. He said, on Saturdays, we're not Democrat or Republican. We're not white or black. We're not Christians or Muslims. We're not sinners. We're not gay or straight. We're just Razorbacks. And I think that's kind of the sense and the camaraderie that you feel as an Arkansas fan, whether you disagree religiously, you disagree from a political standpoint, you disagree from what, or maybe at your different socioeconomic status. One of the great things about going to an Arkansas game is, again, like I said earlier, if you see someone in Razorback red, you just associate them as a friend. Period.
Yeah.
End of story. Like, if you see someone wearing a hog emblem on their hat, on their shirt, or whatever, it doesn't matter. As I just mentioned, the differences, you just associate them as a friend on game day. Now, it might be different, unfortunately, during the week, which I wish it wasn't the case, but especially on those games, or if you just see someone in public, that's That's at least the sense that I've gotten over the years when it comes to people relating to people.
It'll be interesting to see what happens as college sports, and particularly at Arkansas, tries to rebuild as you come out of coronavirus. You know, the thing under Jeff Long is you had some success, so you tried to turn every parking space and every square inch of campus into a buck. Right. You know, you were trying to sell a corporate tent, or every parking spot got too expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, will they make it more affordable, or will they try to come up and be more creative with ideas to make it more lively? Will they loosen up a bit? You know, because I think the more fun you make it, the more you're going to give people a reason to stay or to not stay at home and to come to campus. People are investing tens of thousands of dollars in their backyard. They're buying new homes that have built-in outdoor kitchen and entertainment spaces. They want to stay home in the fall. They want to watch football on their back patio. They want to sit by their new fireplace that's got a TV over it. You better give them a good reason to come to Fayetteville. And winning's the first thing you got to do. But then you've got to make the atmosphere, you know, 6 hours before kickoff a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as you're going to have to find more creative ways to lure people back in, and you're going to have available inventory, you know, the U of A is going to have to listen to people. And I think tailgating is always a great way to get people back, kind of back under the tent.
Carl Levack always texts in. Not only is it the love for other Razorback fans, but it's the disdain and the hatred for Yell Leaders at Texas A&M that binds us together. I think also another important aspect, and maybe again this comes back to my bias, but sports radio before and after games.
Oh, yeah?
It is wild, the calls, and this is not only the calls that I've been a part of being on this radio station, the radio shows that I've listened to over the years prior to me getting a job in this industry and stuff. It is just such a crazy time after a game when you get sport, whether it's a big win or a lopsided loss, the words that come out of people's mouths that are sometimes enhanced by a little liquid courage and stuff, it's yeah, unbelievable. And again, as a guy that grew up listening to sports radio at an early age and has finally actually latched on to the industry and hopefully will be here for quite some time, that's another, I think, important aspect of Arkansas football that can't be overstated and overlooked.
You're listening to the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast, a refreshing light lager combining the crispness of Busch with the light sweetness of apple flavor.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
The battle of wits has begun. It ends when you decide and we both drink.
Come on, you gotta be kidding me.
That's a tough choice.
How can you know all that?
So many options.
Would You Rather Tuesday, presented by Rad.
All right, Rad is Rise Above Alcohol and Drugs. It's a federally funded program to empower youth to engage in substance abuse prevention and advocacy in their schools and across their communities. The Arkansas Partnership for Success program focuses on issues with youth alcohol and marijuana use. So find them on Facebook. You can go to Region 2 PFS, which serves the Baxter, Boone, Marion, Newton, and Searcy County areas. You can find them on Facebook by just searching for Region 2 PFS. That's RAD, Rise Above Alcohol and Drugs.
All right, Jenkins, fire away. Let's get this thing going.
Would you rather have kept and seen what they could do with more time? Who would you rather have kept as your head coach, Ken Hatfield or Lou Holtz?
Lou Holtz was having problems, you know, recruiting was the issue, not the coaching. That's a tough one right there. I think I would like to have seen what Ken Hatfield could have done if the recruiting and the players were there, and seen what he could have done in the Southeastern Conference.
I'm going to go with Tommy as well. I think Ken Hatfield, not to say that Lou Holtz didn't have success at the college level, because we know that is a lie, but I think it comes back to recruiting. And I think if you ask players, and you ask Clay, and you ask Dudley, and you ask everyone else who's covering Arkansas football at the time, they would tell you that Ken Hatfield is probably a better recruiter and probably a better coach. Now, I know that coaches, some people were frustrated with Coach Hatfield because it seemed like for example, we had General Ben from Saline County calling yesterday, and it seemed like they never threw the football enough. But, I mean, sometimes the record speaks for itself, Tommy. And Ken Hatfield had a high level of success, yeah, and the defense, the offense, Quinn Grovey, I mean, he had a bunch of really good players, so I'd probably lean towards Ken Hatfield as well.
The challenge would have been, because as Coach Hatfield was sharing with us yesterday, they recruited a lot of players from Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, because that's where you were playing your games was in the Southwest Conference in that footprint. The challenge would have been for a staff going from a Southwest Conference schedule and a Southwest Conference recruiting model to, could you have recruited in the Southeastern Conference? Could you have made that transition? I just would have liked the steady hand. If the cupboard had been full and ready to go, could you have made that transition? Obviously, it didn't go well with Jack Crow. We all know that. And then Joe Kynes in the interim, you brought in an experienced hand with Danny Ford. That was an experiment that had some success in 95, but not enough success. And ultimately, Houston Nutt was the first coach that gave you some extended success in the SEC. So it's still going to always be about recruiting, and that would have been the challenge for any coach making the transition from one league to the others. Could you have made the transition recruiting as well as on the field?
Would you rather, you guys were talking about Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe earlier, and I didn't hear you guys make a pick, so I'm going to put you to the test. You're an NBA GM. Who would you take, Mace or Isaiah Joe?
Depends on my team's needs. Is that a good cop-out answer?
That's
a great cop-out answer. That's a great cop-out answer. You know what? I love them both. My brother always characterizes Mason Jones as a walking bucket. Isaiah Joe can literally shoot it as soon as he steps on the court. That is his range. That is where he has the capability to just spray it from anywhere. But I think I'll take the cop-out answer in a sense that Isaiah seems to have a higher ceiling. I say that, but, like, Mason improved so much this past season. And like, his game took such a huge step under Eric Musselman in year two at Arkansas. Year one for, obviously, Muss. Year two for Mace at Arkansas. So it's hard. I don't think this is definitive as people think. I think most people would say Isaiah, but Mason, just based on what he has showed us, based on how he continues to prove people wrong, I think he proved me wrong if I picked Isaiah in this situation.
I think that's right. I think Isaiah, as we said earlier in the show, has probably the higher ceiling and maybe a little longer on potential, but Mason Jones is the more proven commodity.
It's the equivalent, Jenkins, of Tommy being asked to pick his favorite kid. Like, you like them both. Yeah. And I love Mason. I love Isaiah. And I had good conversations talking with both of them. Mason was kind enough to give us some time on this very radio show. But, I mean, this is it's tooth and nail, man, when it comes to making this pick.
Yeah, I've always got one at home that thinks I've already picked a favorite. So
never ends for you, does it?
That's what kids are. Yeah, no.
A couple weeks ago, we talked about the Eddie Sutton, Paul Eels hot tub interview. So, with that in mind, would you rather see that brought back with Chuck and Sam Pittman, Chuck and Eric Musselman, or Phil and Dave Van Horn?
Well, either way you go. Now, if you remember from that interview, you know, Eddie Sutton had the kind of the – that was in the day where afros and perms and those were in style. Mm-hmm. I think Chuck and Phil, either way you go, are going to have trouble pulling that out. Mike Nail in that day had the perm going. I think Chuck and Phil, either way you go, that's going to be a challenge for the announcer.
You better hope Chuck's not still listening to the program.
That's why I'm saying.
Here's the thing. Like, it would be entertaining. I think, to be honest, like, if you're going to pick someone, like, they're all going to be entertaining. Like,
I think Pittman in a hot tub is going to be more entertaining than any of them. He just seems more of a – here's the thing. I was watching Musselman on a Zoom call the other night. He couldn't sit still. He moved 20 times in 30 minutes. Got up, moved over here, carrying his tablet or computer or whatever he's around. He couldn't do it.
I would lean probably towards Pittman because I think that's – and most people would like – I mean, they'd like to see, and we have Arkansas baseball fans, basketball fans, and football fans listening to the program, but I would probably lean towards Pittman as well.
Interesting. Let's see here. Would you rather go back in time and witness the first Super Bowl or the first Masters tournament?
Well, I'm a golf guy, so I'm going to go Masters.
I couldn't tell you when either occurred. Couldn't tell you who won the Masters, the first one. I couldn't tell you who won the first Super Bowl.
So I wouldn't go. If you gave me tickets to the next Super Bowl, it's not high on my bucket list. But I'll go to any Masters you want to go to.
I'm kind of with you, so I would stick to more football. But the Masters to me has such more of an appeal than going to the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl has become so corporate, so box office-y, so.
It's too much. I mean, not that the Masters doesn't have security. Trust me, it's a high security event to get into, but it's more spread out once you get in there. Mm-hmm. I've been to a few practice rounds. I've not been to a competitive round, but I would much rather go to the Masters. I would love to see Augusta National in, because the first Masters would have been in 19, early 30s, 32, 3, somewhere in there. So I would love to have seen the course in its the way Bobby Jones originally had that course in the early 30s.
I'd probably go with Masters as well, not because I'd just be fascinated to see it back then, but because I just really don't have that much of a desire and appeal to go see the first Super Bowl, Jenkins.
Would you rather, excuse me if I could talk, would you rather bring back the 80s and 90s style of the NBA or the 90s and 80s style of the NFL?
80s and 90s NBA basketball was the best. Like, I'd take that over the NBA we see today. So I couldn't tell you as much about the NFL back then, but I'd side NBA with this one.
Yeah, NBA, 80s. We all love the 80s in the NBA.
Yeah, Celtics, I mean, you think about the tape delay that they had the NBA on in the 70s, and then how Bird and Magic and then eventually Michael really helped take the NBA back into where it is now relative to where it was. I mean, the 80s NBA with the Celtics and Lakers, the Bad Boy Pistons got in there. I mean, it was just unbelievable. The Sixers won a championship. I would take that. Well, and then the 90s with the Bulls dominance, I would take the NBA 80s and 90s every day of the week.
Dad and I never missed a game because you didn't want to miss the fight. It was like watching hockey. You weren't going to miss the game because Lane Beer is going to slug somebody.
Yeah, if it was the Pistons or Knicks in the 90s, you made sure to pay tune because, like you said, in hockey, there was always a brawl that was about to occur.
Who would you rather interview on the Morning Rush, Magic Johnson, Peyton Manning, or Cal Ripken?
I'm going to go Peyton Manning, and the reason I've watched a lot of these during COVID, I've had access because they put them on TV a lot, these Peyton's places. I don't know if you guys have watched any of this. He is awesome in that stuff, and I have really enjoyed watching that. He is engaging. He's funny. He's entertaining. I am very intrigued with Peyton Manning. I think he is great on TV.
I think I'd go Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson had one of the best charismas, a really good interview. I enjoyed listening to him even today. His Twitter's kind of funny because he's just very, I don't really know how to describe it, but I would probably go Magic just based on the interviews and stuff I've seen. Like, Brent Musburger used to do the interviews for CBS, and it was always a pleasure to watch those with him and Magic after a finals winner, after a big-time conference, Western Conference win. I enjoyed listening to those, so I would probably go Magic Johnson in this case.
Would you rather have all traffic lights you approach be green or never have to stand in line ever again?
Isn't that kind of the same thing? I mean, to me, hitting every red light is about the most frustrating thing in the world.
I would probably go the line because, like, probably the line because if you can, like, any dinner reservation, any...
Is this drive-through, too? Does this include drive-through?
Everything.
Boy.
I'd go not stand in line.
I'm going to go green lights.
I don't... You're more akin to get angry during traffic stuff. I'm more akin to...
It's not the it's the stupid people that can't maneuver traffic, so...
Let's see here. Would you rather give up pizza forever or tacos forever?
Tacos.
I'll give up pizza forever. I'm not the pizza guy that Ty is.
Would you rather be an award-winning musician, athlete, or actor?
Athlete.
Depends on if you value being famous. I'd rather be an athlete. But if you want to be famous, the more famous people are the musicians, right?
I would argue.
They always have more followers and, you know, all that stuff. So make more money.
Who would you rather?
And their careers last longer.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, who would you rather take a road trip with, Ruskin, Zach, or Phil, to Yellowstone National Park?
Well, Ruskin's not going to get out and go hiking, do any of that. Any of that outdoor stuff, you can write him off. Phil's probably going to be more outdoorsy. So I'd probably go Phil just if you actually want to get out and do things.
I think I'd drive me and Arnes off a cliff if we drove that far.
I'm going to go Phil just because I think Arnes would get out and do some stuff. Ruskin's going to – he's never leaving the car.
Yeah, I'd probably
– first bear sighting, he's out of there.
I'd push Arnes off the cliff, so I'd go Phil as well.
Last one, would you rather grow a Phil Elson mustache like the mustache you saw him have a couple weeks ago or dreadlocks?
I don't think I'm capable of the latter.
I think if you
grow the first, you may have to report that to the police.
Just imagine Ty with that mustache.
I wish I could grow facial hair, so I don't think I could. I don't know if I could do either, to be honest. So I'd be I'd be
I'll go mustache.
Stretch, yeah, I'd be screwed with both those categories. So
pick it up a little bit. Get your chin up. Smile.
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast.